Welcome to the show. We have Kim Addis. Kim is the president and founder of Frame of Mind Coaching and Journal Engine Software. She's an author, speaker, entrepreneur, coach, and get this, mother of five. She's recognized as one of North America's foremost experts on performance through mastery. She has a unique process of integrating online journaling and coaching that really helps highly driven clients make shifts in their life to get the next level of result. Today's episode, we really jump into what that means. What is Frame of Mind Coaching? What is going on with all this journaling? How does that help? How does that break the patterns? If you're interested in a system that helps you learn how to observe your own thoughts, your patterns of thinking, and what you can do to shift them, Kim has got a lot of solutions. Plus, because she's a coach and she thinks about this stuff all day long, she really hopped into and embraced the idea of authenticity. I hope you like today's episode. Stay tuned. Welcome to this week's episode. Today we have Kim Addis on the phone. Hey, Kim, how are you?
I'm great, and I'm super excited to be talking to you. I'm looking forward to this.
Thank you. I'm so excited to have you on as well. I'm very interested in what you have going on. Kim is a coach, and she actually started a company around something called Frame of Mind Coaching. So I was actually hoping we could start off by you giving us a little background, what Frame of Mind Coaching is, you know, what drew you to create this?
So Frame of Mind Coaching is a slightly different concept in the coaching arena. What we do is we look at how people think and how their thinking impacts their outcomes. And our purpose really is to help people think in ways that lead them to, you could say, a more authentic, happier, more accomplished, peaceful life. So maybe that doesn't sound so different from normal coaching, but the way we do it is a little bit different. So what we do when we coach people is we record every single call. And the reason we record every call is so that our clients can start to become observers of their own thinking and start to hear themselves, start to hear their language, their tone, the stories they tell, and start to become observers of how they think, how they show up, and how their thinking is impacting them. And then the second part of what we do when we coach people is that we ask them to journal in an online journal every single day for the duration of the coaching period. And each time they journal, their journal goes to their coach. I have a team of coaches, and the coach reads and responds to the journal. So it's a very intense and intimate experience. And the purpose of the journaling is to capture their thinking over a variety of situations, time frames, experiences, and start to pick up the patterns and see where their thinking is propelling them forward and where their thinking is really getting in the way of them living the life that they want to live and interfering with their ability to reach their goals. So we just do it a little differently.
I love that. I mean, I start all of my clients with this idea of like the observer self and the narratives and the things we say, but I love this idea of recording the call. How did you come up with that concept?
We came up with it early on because I honestly started to have a team of coaches and I thought, how do I ensure that very, very high quality of coaching? How do I make sure, sure, you know, everybody's performing at a high level? Let's record the calls. And if anything ever happens where the coach needs some assistance, I can go back and listen to the calls and see what's going on and how the client is reacting. And I could help the coach, you know, make some adjustments if necessary. So in my 11 years, I think I've listened to two calls. So I don't go in and listen to the calls unless absolutely necessary. But what we do is we ask the clients to listen to the calls. And what we found is that the clients almost get coached twice. And those people who listen to their calls accelerate their progress by leaps and bounds in comparison to those who don't.
I totally believe it. I mean, it's such a great concept because the patterns, the things we think, we're so unaware of them and it's so hard to get that objectivity. So another way in which, you know, people try to create that objectivity is meditation and teaching the art of meditation. Is that something that influences your coaching or is it not?
So, you know, when you were born, you weren't really taught, like when you were a little kid, you weren't taught to meditate. Maybe you're rare and you had like these really cool parents, but no. Most of us didn't, right?
Right.
but every single parent teaches their kid how to read and write. And so journaling is almost a little bit more of a natural state. Now, here's the interesting part about journaling. And if you ever try journaling out loud. So what does that mean? As you're typing or as you're writing, say the words you're writing or typing. And what you'll notice is that the speed at which you're able to put down what you're thinking is much slower than you're thinking. And so what happens when you journal is actually you enter into a state of meditation, because meditation is about slowing down the mind and creating space. And so journaling is a form, in some instances, of meditation, allowing you to kind of just slow down. And while you're slowing down, solve problems.
And then the coach helps them find the patterns, because even when people journal, they often sometimes can't see those patterns.
Well, that's right. And so, you know, what's interesting is that every time if you were my client, you would journal and I would read and respond to your journal. But so what's happening for me as the coach is I am able to collect a whole bunch of data about you. And I have a lot of information that allows me to connect the dots that I wouldn't have if all I were doing was just speaking to you on the phone. Because everybody's listening skills are, let's call it, tampered with, right? And so I'm collecting data from a variety of sources, the calls and the journals and the behaviors you describe, the reactions, the responses, the interactions, the conversations. And so over a length of time, I'm able to see how your thinking is impacting you. It's very powerful.
Very, very cool. And you have an assessment tool, right?
Yes. Yeah, so at the beginning of every coaching experience, and for whoever's listening, I invite everybody to try this out as well. It's very important before you start taking action, you know, this concept of massive action. Before you take action, it's very important for you to know where you're headed. And most people don't know how they're oriented. So they say, okay, I want a change in my life. I got to do X, Y, and Z. And so they automatically start taking action. They start moving forward, except they don't realize that in a lot of the cases, they're pointed backwards. They're pointed away from what it is that they really want. And so the action leads them to bumping into brick walls. And so what I want to do with people is before taking any massive action, in fact, before taking any action, let's turn you towards where you're headed, where you really want to go. And so taking stock of where you are right now is probably the single most important starting point. And we do that with our clients, and we invite anybody who's interested in that action, in that activity, to go to the website and take the assessment as well so that it can be reviewed with a coach.
And the assessment, there's a lot of tests out there that, you know, measure your temperament, all different things. What is it specifically that you're measuring?
Yeah, so it's not so much a measurement. It's more of a snapshot. What we're doing is we're taking a snapshot of how you feel about a variety of things in your life so that there's kind of like a numerical evaluation associated with that. And then we give you the opportunity to journal. And when you're able to go back and read what you wrote and where you stand and what's working and what's not working in your life, you're starting to understand, okay, so like I'm here, here's where I've been pointed for so long. And if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm not going to get where I want to go. I kind of have to stop for a minute and make a massive shift. And a lot of people think that the shift that needs to happen is by doing things differently. But I'm suggesting that what needs to happen is you got to think differently first before your actions follow. And yeah. So have you ever heard the expression, if you always do what you always did, you'll always get what you always got? You ever heard that?
Sure.
But it's wrong. Right? It's inaccurate. And so like, how is it inaccurate? The real quote needs to be, if you always think what you always thought, you'll always get what you always got.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Yes. And, you're and preaching so, to the choir. Yeah, absolutely. That's true. That's true. I never thought about that. Right. Because the thoughts come first and the action comes second.
So exactly.
Yeah. So if I work with you and I record my calls and I journal every day and people are looking at it, they see the pattern, then what? How do you help people then make the change?
So what we're looking at is identifying the beliefs that are interfering with your ability to achieve your goals and to live the life you want to live. So to live your desires.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're looking for beliefs. Why? Because beliefs really hold dominion over everything. So if you want to start a business and, you know, you start taking action, but you believe that you don't have enough money, you don't have enough expertise, you don't know what you're doing, it'll never happen for you. Well, that overrides any action you ever take.
Right, right. And so you find this limiting belief.
Yes. And then we challenge it when we teach our clients a set of tools to help them identify their own beliefs and trade them in for better beliefs. Ones that are, let's call them viable, right? Ones that they can truly grasp. We don't ask our clients to stand in front of a mirror and say, I'm a millionaire, I'm a millionaire, I'm a millionaire, when they have money in their wallets, right?
Right.
And so, because what happens is if we ask them to do that, in the back of their head, they're thinking, who am I kidding? Who am I kidding? Who am I kidding?
Right.
And so that story is really the dominant story. That's the one that takes hold of the situation and controls things. And so we ask them to stand in the mirror instead. Actually, we don't ask them to stand anywhere, but we ask them to consider the idea that making some money is a possibility. And then we expand it from there.
Got it. Got it. And so why journaling? Like, how come you turned towards journaling? Was that a passion of yours?
So for me, journaling was something that I definitely turned to in the most difficult times of my life. And I found that it was, you know, it gave me peace. It gave me comfort. And honestly, at times it was like the only oxygen I could hold on to. But so why journaling? When I started coaching, I really wanted to make sure that every single call was super high impact, that the kind of coaching I did made a huge difference in somebody's life. Not a marginal difference, but a difference that was lifelong and long lasting.
Yeah.
And so I thought, how do I make sure every call is powerful? And I thought the only way to do that is to really get into their minds and see what they're thinking and feeling on a day-by-day basis, is to get that inner dialogue. And so that's when I turned to journaling initially, was because I felt that the data I would collect through the journal would enable me to be a more powerful coach. What I didn't know early on was that it had all kinds of other characteristics too. So if you're journaling every day and I'm reading and responding to your journal, what's happening? We're in contact every day. What happens when someone's in contact with you every day? They build a relationship. And when they build a relationship that's that intimate, the client ends up making massive progress because they're in a very safe environment.
Yeah, very, very cool. I love your model. And one of the things I noticed is that you work with highly driven clients. What are the unique trappings that you've seen that particular client base fall into? Is there sort of common issues that you've seen?
Well, I do. I see, like, I coach a lot of leaders, a lot of entrepreneurs, and, you know, they fall into all kinds of thinking traps. Actually, I even wrote a white paper about that very subject. And so what do I see? I mean, sometimes they feel a great deal of isolation. They feel like they're in it alone, that they don't really have other people who can understand where they're coming from, and the burden of responsibility is on them. Other times they have tunnel vision. They have a very specific mission, a very specific goal, and there's only one way to get there, and they lack a sense of openness to other inputs, and that becomes a problem, and then they miss a whole bunch of opportunity. And here's another one that I see all the time. They're very concerned with the way they are viewed by the outside world. So they spend a lot of time worrying about image management. I don't mean just physical kind of looks, but, you know, their reputation, how they're perceived by others. And so that really traps them and has them feel like every move is monitored. And so they're not able to live freely, and they're not able to do what they want to do for themselves. They do, or they live a life because of what's expected by others. And that's a problem. A lot of them make poor decisions, and it's because they need to make a decision fast. So they end up making decisions that aren't necessarily aligned with their values. So I see all kinds of thinking traps that these leaders fall into.
Yeah, I'm sure imposter syndrome is one that I also see a lot. You know, if people really knew the truth,
yes,
I don't know what I'm talking about.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. And so as much as, like, you know, I coach as well, and I have a system, and I feel really good, and I'm sure you do, you know, you want the results. But, you know, I've definitely noticed that there are once in a while clients that, you know, are resistant to change. What kinds of clients, what have you seen over the years that you've been doing this? Why do people stay stuck? Why are some people harder to move through the process?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've had a few in my experience that are very, very stubborn. You know, they're just they're stuck. They're just stuck. And they view the world through a very specific lens. And to help them see it through a different lens, for some people, it's very difficult to do. And so for me, like I train coaches to become coaches. And so one of the things that I teach them is their progress should never be judged by you. So for one person, a client might move a mountain and that's amazing progress. And for the next person, they might move a little anthill. And for them, it's like moving a mountain. Mm-hmm. And so you can never judge the progress of your client based on your own scale. You have to judge it on their scale.
Yeah, that's a great and fair point.
Yeah. So for me, I'm not always so concerned with how far they move based on, you know, my hope or my expectation. I look at where did they start. And some people look, you know, some people are born with a faster metabolism. And if they want to get in shape, it's not going to take too much work. Other people need a little more work. They don't have the natural DNA to get in shape with great ease. And so everybody has a term, a journey, and it's not for us to judge it in any way.
Yeah. What is the difference between coaching and therapy?
So, yeah, I don't really want to speak out of turn. I'm not a therapist, but I've been in therapy and I can share with you this. I remember when I was getting divorced, I went to see a family counselor. And at the very beginning, I would go and kind of share my soul and, you know, kind of unload and leave the place feeling completely spent and, you know, cried for a whole hour. And so week after week, this was what was happening. And, you know, week one, two, three, by week five, I remember walking in and feeling kind of funny. It felt a little unusual. And what occurred to me was the disparity in the relationship and how uneven it was. And I remember going in and sitting down on the couch and saying, "So what's new with you?" So I'll tell you, the relationship between a coach and a therapist is completely different.
Yeah.
With a client. That's one thing for sure. The second thing is, from a coaching perspective, when I look at my clients, there's nothing wrong with them. They're not sick. They're not ill. They don't need to be fixed. There's nothing wrong with them. What they need is to have someone help them see how they are really standing in their own way and getting in the way of their ability to reach their goals. Whereas with therapy, I think there's more of an emphasis on pathology and illness and that type of thing. Also, in therapy, I think there's a lot of backwards looking at history. And in coaching, it's really about the present and the future. Of course, we look a little bit in the past because the past informs our present, but it's really about having someone accept their past and helping them really propel and move forward. So, you know, with a kind of an uneducated answer, that's what I would say.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I would very much describe it the same way. I think there's a sense of root cause with a therapist, going back, finding out why you are the way you are, and maybe a sense that something broke along the way. In coaching's much more, we're here today, how do we move forward?
Exactly.
So I'm really interested to hear you respond to the core questions that we talk about on this particular podcast about authenticity, since this is something you study and think about regularly. What does an authentic life mean to you?
For me, an authentic life is someone who gets to be themselves and express themselves fully without monitoring the reactions, actions, opinions of others. That's a huge part of being authentic. Being authentic is also acknowledging who you are, your strengths, your weaknesses, your quirks, your beauty, maybe places where you aren't that beautiful also. But it's just being okay with who you are and living a life according to your values. Right.
I love that. I love being yourself and expressing yourself fully without the reactions of others. I'm going to put that up on Twitter, I think. No, in all seriousness, I really think that's wonderful. It's beautifully put. And were you somebody who authenticity came to naturally? Did you have a straight path towards this, or did you have a big turning point?
No, not at all. I'll tell you, I got married the first time very, very young. I was 20 years old, and I was married to someone who had a very different cultural upbringing than I did. And what I found was that I was not always completely pleased with his behavior. And so I found myself engaging in, let's call it, means of manipulation in order to get him to behave in ways that were more acceptable to me. That's not authentic.
Right.
Right. At all. And so even though I would describe them as being manipulative for good purposes, so I'll give you an example, right? So my family lives in Montreal, and I would go back and my mom would, for example, buy him a sweater. Okay. My ex-husband, and I would come back and I would give him the sweater, and he would say, thank you for the sweater. And I would say, well, you know, how about if you call my mom and say thank you? And he would say, well, you gave me the sweater, so I'm saying thank you to you. And that would irk me, right? That would just like drive me mad. It would rub me the wrong way. It would, you know, cause my insides to scream. And it really clashed with every value that I had. And so my way of coping with that was to talk to my mother and then say, here, you know, I passed her the phone, or I passed my husband the phone and say, my mom wants to talk to you. Mm. And so I would orchestrate, or what I would call manipulate, a scenario where I would force him to do what I wanted him to do because I thought it was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Now, you might say, yeah, but it is the right thing to do. However, when you're manipulating others, when you are wanting them to behave in a certain way in order to make you feel good, you're not living authentically.
Right.
And so for a good portion of my life, I was maneuvering the pieces in order for me to feel at peace.
And how did you make the change? What was the breakpoint?
I did a lot of this kind of work. I got coached. I did a lot of studying. I did all of this. And finally, I started to understand I actually don't have control over the way other people behave.
Isn't that a liberating moment?
Oh my God. It's like a game changer right there, right?
Yeah.
And I don't have to get involved, and I don't have to manipulate even when I think it's for a good purpose and it's aligned with my values. I don't have to do any of that. If he wants to have a bad relationship with my mother, let him have a bad relationship with my mother. Let my mother say, hey, that wasn't cool. Let it be between them. Why do I need to interfere? Why do I have to manage so many parts? And so for me, authentic living is the release or the reduction of managing parts, you know, just like, man, spending a lot more time taking care of me and controlling my reactions instead of controlling every other thing that is completely out of my control.
Because in reality, when you really do start to focus on yourself, there's a lot there to manage. Right?
Like, there's a lot there to manage, of course. There, you know, I'm a mother of five, and so there are a lot of moving parts in my life. And so, yes, there are definitely a lot of things to manage.
Yeah, we spend so much time thinking about these things, the other people, the world around us, and ultimately, it is a full-time job to take care of yourself. And so when you've done the work, you've taken yourself to this new space, you now help others. When you're facing stress and things are getting out of hand, you've got five kids, you've got a business, life gets hard sometimes. How do you stop yourself from making inauthentic decisions? How do you stop from reverting back?
I find that I don't really revert back. I don't have the bandwidth. And so that piece is kind of out of my system. Perhaps the stuff that is in my system that I still need to work on is that I have a very, very full plate. And I'm always wondering how to reduce the load. And I haven't found a solution for that. And I think part of that is, you know, when you think about living an authentic life is living the life you desire. But I think of, you know, I have all these obligations, all these responsibilities to all these people. And I think that to some degree prevents me and other people from living the life I truly ultimately want to live.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that balance between being busy and having a full life, but not being overrun by it.
That's right. That's right. We all have work to do, right? It never goes away.
It never goes away. And so what are your daily practices or habits to maintain this lifestyle?
Well, I journal. I journal daily. I spend some time with my husband on a regular basis, which gives me a lot of kind of joy and comfort. And I have this kind of philosophy. And the philosophy is, when you're kicked, get back up. And so that's what I do. You know, I'm a normal person. I have highs and lows, but I don't let the lows keep me down for very long. And I think that that's a way of thinking that I've adopted over the years that really has taken a much more prominent role in my life over the years.
And what does that look like to somebody who's struggling with that process? If things get hard and you feel like you've been kicked down because everybody's had that, what steps do you take to pull yourself out?
You know, for me, of course, journaling plays a big role. And, you know, for whoever's listening, I'll give you a journaling exercise, which has helped dramatically for me. And the first part is like, write it out, write out whatever is bothering you, write the experience of getting kicked, write how much it hurts, write about it and unload. And if you think you're done, keep going, like, just make sure it's all out of your system. And then at the end of that process, what you want to do is say, so where do I want to go now? So I'm done with the venting. What do I want? Where do I want to go? What would I rather have? Where am I heading? And this idea of constantly building the muscle of turning yourself towards what you want. You know, for me personally, I often live in the state of imagining myself at a much older age. So I imagine myself at 85 or 90 years old. And I look in the mirror, and while I see like little wrinkles, I think of myself, I speak to myself from that older, wiser place. And I think, wow, you still look fantastic for your age. You know, your skin is really actually very smooth, because I know when I'm 95, it's not going to look like it looks now, right? And so I often have that older, wiser conversation. And so sometimes one of the conversation pieces is, my greatest fear is just not getting up. So it's okay if I get up and trip and fall and make mistakes, but it's not okay not to get up. And yeah. So I just keep going.
Yeah, that's a wonderful exercise. I often think, I'm 45, what would I say to my 20-year-old self, right?
Right.
And so I gotta, you know, all the things I would say, I would just say, take it easy. It's going to work out. Like, don't stress over the little things, right? And so right. I take those same sound bites and I say, well, I'm sure it's going to be true when I'm 65 looking at 45.
Right. Exactly.
It's been such a pleasure having you on, hearing all about the work you do. If people are looking for more information, they want to take the assessment, where can they find you?
Best place is frameofmindcoaching.com. We've got a blog up there. We've got client stories up there. We've got testimonials, and we absolutely have the assessment, and greatest place to get to know us. We have our coaches posted up there. If you're looking for someone interesting and quirky, you can choose, but do come and visit us and just get to know us a little bit better.
Fantastic. Well, Kim, I can't thank you enough for coming on The Art of Authenticity and sharing all of your great tips with our audience.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Of course.